Hey there, I'm Jade.
And I'm Josh, and on this episode of Our Taste is Trash,
we review the claymation sequel Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget,
discuss Golden Globe winners,
and talk about our insane holiday break.
So remember to rate, review, and follow wherever you listen.
Stick around.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Welcome, welcome back to Our Taste is Trash. We've taken a few weeks off for the holidays. I think, Jade, I think we both needed... Well, before we do that, I've almost forgotten how to do the show, Jade. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jade.
There we are. There we are. We did it. I think we both needed a little bit of a break, Jade. I just moved internationally and had my in-laws here for the holidays for 2 weeks. And well, we had a lot of fun having your in-laws or just parents around for 2 weeks. Gets a little stressful at times. And, you know, having people, no matter how much you enjoy them, in your space for weeks at a time, it can sometimes just be an adjustment, you know? So, like, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on the last couple of weeks. What have you been up to, Jade, the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so similarly, and this, you know, has contributed to why we also haven't put out episodes, I was actually away visiting my family for a little over 2 weeks. So I know, crazy to have it at the same time. So, you know, Josh had his family there. I was with my family. So I was in Georgia visiting and staying with them. And I had such a wonderful time. But there's definitely a point, too, where you're kind of almost like it is too much time. And it's not so much that I was like over them, but it's more just like I wanted to be back in my own space, you know?
And you know what I can't understand? And maybe you're like this as well. I can't understand people who don't like being alone. Like, I don't get it. Like, there are times where I'm just like, you know what? I love all of you, but like, I need an hour where I'm not talking to anyone.
Well, especially when you're an introvert. Like, and for me too, like having anxiety and depression, like I need my social battery to be recharged. Like I only can give so much, and it's never like anything against anyone that I'm around. Like it's nothing they're doing or saying or whatever, but there's moments where I'm like, I just need to be by myself with my things, doing the things that I like and I want to do. And for me, more often than not, that's like, I want to sit, watch my shows, like watch what I want to watch with complete silence. I think that's the hardest part is living by myself. You know, I can just like, it's quiet. Everything's quiet. I can watch things in peace. I don't have pets. I have nothing to distract me. And if I want to be distracted, I can be, but otherwise if I don't, it's fine. But when you live in a large household, there's just no stopping
chaos
that.
All the time.
It's just, it's happening.
Yeah.
Oh, and especially watching. So I would go to like watch a movie with my aunt in the living room, and they do not watch subtitles. They hate it. They hate subtitles. So,
Jade, what is it about people? I'm sorry. What is it about people who can't do subtitles? What is it about those people?
I don't know. All of them are like, it's too distracting.
My parents don't either. Like, I'm like, can we have this on?
They say it's distracting, and yet they'll be like on TikTok on their phone at the same time they're watching the movie. So I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. But literally though, it's like, but because, you know, open concept house, people coming into the kitchen, making food, walking in and out, talking to us as we're watching it. I'm like,
and I'm assuming, Jade, asking you what's going on every frame of the movie, right? There's always one person.
Because they walk in on whatever you're watching.
What's happening?
They're like, what is this? They go, what are you watching? I'm watching this. Okay. They start making food. Wait, why is that girl doing that?
Oh,
I can't explain this to you. I'm in the middle of watching it. So like, luckily for me, because I've seen everything on the planet, everything they put on, I've already seen before. So it wasn't like I was missing out on anything. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know how anyone watches TV. Like, this is so cute. And then also a part of me is like, it's also starting to click a little bit why certain people don't like or understand certain films, because it requires concentration or requires, you know, you to actually focus on the movie.
And like reflection on what you just watched, you know, like reflecting on what am I watching in real time? No, it's the same thing. Like, I think both sets of our parents, like in families, watch TV in a different way. Like my mom, I know my parents, I can't stand watching stuff that I haven't watched with my parents, because my mom is notorious for coming into and not sitting down until the movie is like 30 seconds into it, and immediately we'll sit down. Like the the title credits will have just rolled, and she'll sit down and be like, "Who's that? What are they doing? What?" And I have to be like, "I don't know. We literally have just started watching this. I have no idea. We're watching it for the first time again.
We're in it at the same time."
So like my response now, like she'll ask that, and I'll be like, "You know, we're gonna find out together. We're going to find out together, because I don't fucking know. I'm trying to also figure it fuck out." Like,
yes.
Oh, I can't stand
it. Watching with my mom, like, love her, but holy shit. It's like she 100% cannot put. First of all, when I went to her house and she pulled up her Netflix and I see the continue watching list has like 800 titles in it, and all of them, the bar is like either halfway or like a third of the way. And I'm like, "Mom, you just start all these and not finish them?" She's like, "Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like lose focus halfway through. And then I don't know. I never finish it." And I'm like, "Oh my holy God. Fucking shit." And then I understood why, because we put on a movie and I just see her like eyes glazing over partway through the movie. And I'm like, I'm at a loss. Like, I don't understand. Like, but then what cracks me up, and then she actually does watch something all the way through, and then she'll try to talk to me about it. And then I'm like, "I don't think you understood what happened in that movie." And then I'm like, "And I know why you didn't understand, because I guarantee you glazed away." Like,
over the important part, the pivotal moment that they told you something. Yeah.
That certain things. And I'm like, "Yeah," because she'll talk about, and then I'll like come back and be like, "No, that's not what that was about. Like, remember when this happened in this scene, and they did this and that, that's where that's coming from." She's like, "Oh, I don't remember that happening." I'm like, "Yeah, because you probably mentally checked out at that time." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And I'm like, and it's so crazy because I'm like, that's how some people genuinely watch movies. Yeah. And I'm like, teach their own, but my God.
That's why they don't understand or like certain movies, because they just don't have the time or the focus to sit down and do that. You know what we did do, Jade? And this is my fault. During one of the movies we watched during the time here is, we were going back and forth one time, and this is like, they had picked out a couple of movies and we had watched some stuff. Like, they picked up Maestro one night, which I knew was going to be bad, and it was just as painful to watch as I thought it was going to be. But I kind of dropped a joke at one point and I said, "Oh, there's this new funny movie, Saltburn, that's out." And Jenny was like, "Shut your fucking mouth. Shut your fucking
Josh.
Mouth. And then like the seed got planted, and like 3 days later, her mom, that's all she could talk about. "I want to watch Saltburn. I want to watch Saltburn." And I was like, so we watched
what did you
it.
Do?
We watched it with her parents, and it was
shut
hilarious.
Up. That is not a movie you watch with your parents it or was your family.
I was laughing. It made the movie for me that much more funny. Honestly, though,
of course,
the movie is not as shocking as TikTok makes it out to be. Like, yes, there's some crazy shit, but you know what the people that are saying this is shocking have to be the most vanilla fucking people in the world. Like, honestly, Jade, there are other parts of that movie that are more like awkwardly funny and have dark humor moments that were so much more disturbing to me than any of the scenes you've seen depicted on TikTok. Like,
so I have intentionally been at least avoiding scenes or spoilers about the film, but I have seen quite a few people like review and say pretty much exactly that, of like, what are people talking about? These scenes are not as crazy as they actually are, which just to show that the people saying that don't watch enough cinema that is in that vein, which makes sense, because I don't even know how Saltburn got the popularity that it did to the general audience, because I thought it was going to be one of those movies that flew under the radar.
I did too.
And that only film people were going to be talking about, and the fact that it got as much hype as it did. And I don't know if that's because of Jacob Elordi being in it, because obviously he's hot shit
right
now.
I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Priscilla, Euphoria, all that jazz. But yeah, so I'm intrigued. I haven't watched, like I said, I haven't watched it yet. So when I go to watch it, I want to know.
I can't wait.
Exactly.
You need to be texting me when you watch it. Like, I want to know your thoughts as it happens, Shade. But you know what? I didn't get a chance to watch, but because I want to stay up till 1 a.m. on a fucking Sunday here in Ireland, I didn't watch the Golden Globes. But when I woke up in the morning, I immediately checked the fucking winners list.
Yeah.
Jade, what the fuck happened at the Globes? Like, what is going on?
Oh my God. Okay. So I feel like we've talked about this in the past when we've done Golden Globe reviews, but I feel like the Globes, there's a reason why it doesn't get taken as seriously as like the Academy Awards. You know, number one, I think we all know that certain, you know, awards can be bought, especially the Globes. And number two, like, I just feel like this is such a weird time for these certain, like, all these movies came in like under the fucking wire for nominations. So like half of them weren't even released when they were nominated.
I think it was what, last year or 2 years ago, where we commented on the fact that we had watched almost every nominated movie, like in the major categories, where we were like, yes. Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that. Without going through, because usually what I'll do is when the Oscar nominations come out, I'll usually go through the list and go, oh, I want to watch these five or six movies. Because 90% of the time, either they were late releases or they weren't popular. You know what I mean?
Right.
Almost everything in the movie category, with a handful of exceptions, are movies that you said flew under the radar, came out super late. Or like some of them I hadn't even fucking heard of before. I was like, what is this movie that's being nominated? I don't understand. And then the winners, like, I feel like the TV categories fared better, but the winners were just, they felt equally predictable and disappointing at the same time.
Yes. It was just, I don't know. I kind of felt like, also, by the way, I will say to all the people that thought Barbie was going to win a bunch, I hate to say that I was right, because look, we can go back and look at our review of Barbie that we did here on the podcast. And I remember, Josh, you were shocked. I rated it a gem. And honestly, thinking back, I completely am still in agreement for myself that it is a gem, because I think the hardest thing that most people have come to realize or accept about Barbie is it's not quite the feminist film that it projects itself to be. And also, it's so bizarre to me that to this day, the most talked about scene, person, things about the entire Barbie movie is Ken. And it's so fucking frustrating, because I'm like, that was not at least the intention of the writer director, Greta Gerwig. And yet, it became, and I knew that's what was going to happen. That was my biggest complaint when we talked about the movie, was that there was too much Ken and too much, and the fucking Ken song. I was like, why does Ken get an original song, an entire dance number? And Barbie didn't. Barbie got her dancing with all the other Barbies to a Charlie XCX Dua Lipa song, whatever the fuck that was.
I mean, I don't want to be this guy, but I will be. Two things that I took away from the Barbie movie. One, Ken, 100%. Like, I'm not going to say that I didn't. But also, I feel like America Ferrera is completely underrated in her performance in Barbie.
People forget about her character.
I don't, because she gave the best monologue of the entire movie. Like,
that was the best part of the movie. That was the part that made the most sense in the film speech, in terms of what it's supposed to be.
Her speech still makes me choke up. Like, that's the one that I see all over my feed on TikTok is like, especially grown women, like in their 50s, watching that monologue and like crying and
feeling
like it makes me choke up, like, watching that part. I though would argue, and maybe this is just me being a man, I think Ryan Reynolds as an actor, Ryan Gosling as an actor brought more to his part than Margot Robbie did to Barbie.
But whose fault is that? Is that Greta or is that Margot? Is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. No, because
Margot worked with Greta on figuring out who Barbie's supposed to be in this film. And that is obviously what they settled on. And I think the hardest part is, and again, my criticism when we reviewed it, is we did not give enough time to Barbie's growth and what that meant to be a human woman in the human world. Instead, we kept cutting to fucking scenes of Will Ferrell as an executive trying to chase down Barbie.
That stuff could have been cut out. All of that. I hated that whole storyline.
I hated all of that. So instead, we get less scenes of Barbie having this growth. And not only Barbie, but again, you know, we have this incredible speech by America Ferrera in the end talking about her feelings. And yet Margot Robbie's Barbie is supposed to be stand-in for America. That's her personal Barbie. And that's why she's exemplifying her feelings. And yet we get almost no America Ferrera. And we also don't get a huge growth journey for her. It's, yeah, she repairs the relationship with her daughter a little bit by the end, and she has that wonderful monologue. But where was the journey in the midst of all that? I felt like it was so rushed because the whole time her and her daughter are with the fucking executives chasing down Barbie in Barbie Land. Meanwhile, we spend 30 to 45 minutes on Ken making a Mojo Dojo Casa house. And I was like, well, so sorry, that was a whole tangent. No. But basically to say that I'm not surprised at all that Barbie didn't take home the awards that it took home that people thought it was going to. Now, granted, Greta Gerwig, I think definitely could have gotten a best director.
That's what I'm most disappointed by. That's what I'm most disappointed by, to be honest. Like that's the one. Like, but here's why I'm going back to this. Why, you know, aside from being angry at Barbie, I'm angry at the Golden Globes because here's a couple of things. One, they missed an amazing opportunity here. Barbenheimer was the most successful thing that happened to Main Street fucking theaters in a long fucking time. Like in a long time. That's one of the first times that I heard of. There are people that you and I didn't do the double feature, Jade, and we are movie people because I was like, I'm not going to make it through it. You said you're not going to make it through it.
There's no way.
There are people who don't go to the movies that I know that did that sat through a movie theater for fucking 6 hours or whatever the fuck it was. And I'm like,
yeah,
bless you because
Barbie was like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something. And then Oppenheimer was like 3 hours.
Yeah. Well,
Jesus.
Of course, Oppenheimer, and I think both you and I called this one best motion picture drama because they split their best picture categories in the Golden Globes.
Yep.
It did beat out. I need to watch Killers of the Flower Moon. I can probably understand why it beat that out because I think that it's going to be a good movie. I don't know that it's going to be Scorsese's best. But also, there was a lot of hype about Past Lives, and I'm a little shocked that especially the foreign press didn't give more heedance to Past Lives over Oppenheimer because, again, not having watched, I'm going to say this again, I haven't watched Oppenheimer, but I feel like I know what the movie's going to be. Like, I know what a Christopher...
Of course we know what it's going to be. It's Chris... Yeah, like you said, it's Christopher Nolan. It's a period drama based on historical facts.
Loosely based on the facts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like this is an event that happened. This is a real person, but everything else in between is fictionalized.
Kind of, exactly. But
Past Lives, I was shocked too.
But where I thought Barbie would win is perhaps in the best comedy or musical category.
I knew that wasn't going to happen.
Well, but I mean, look at the competition, Jade. I mean, honestly, aside from Poor Things won, and I think Poor Things is going to be great. Yeah. I'm really excited to see Poor Things. It's been on my list for a long time.
So I have my list of when we did the predictions, and I had Barbie and Poor Things. I knew it was going to be between the two.
100%, which I think makes sense. But I mean, I thought that the Globes would see a marketing opportunity here because you could have labeled this whole thing Barbenheimer, and it would have been... I mean, come on. Yeah. That's all people would have been talking about. But it was up against fucking Air, American Fiction, that no one's seen. Air is horrible. Air is fucking horrible.
Matt I don't Damon know how paid, Air got on the list.
They he must had have to paid pay. Out the ass. They must have bribed out the ass for that.
And I talked about this last episode. May, December does not deserve to be in this category. No. That's a fucking weird category for this movie. And that just shows me that they knew there was no way they could compete in drama, and they just threw it in musical comedy. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, 100%. And where Barbie won, they have this new category this year called Cinematic and Box Office Achievement, which I don't I loosely understand. Does that just mean it made a fuck ton of money? Like, is that what we're basing it on?
I think it's a box office performance and sales.
But honestly, I think an award should almost have gone to, as much as I don't care about this as a movie, Taylor Swift, the Eras Tour, she killed it in the marketing for that fucking film. That is literally just a videotape of her fucking tour. I mean,
it's because people couldn't afford to do the concert, so they just went to go see the movie.
100%. But like,
I don't think things like that should be allowed to be in the same category.
No.
It just, to me, that's not a movie. A video of a concert.
Yeah.
It's not even a documentary. It's just, it'd be the same thing if I brought my iPhone and then.
Well, there's a little more production value to it.
But like, you know what I mean? It's like, you're just watching someone film a thing that exists. Like I felt the same way about fucking Hamilton. Remember that?
Oh yeah. Well, that's
like,
because
at least Hamilton is an actual like.
I was massively disappointed by that because in my mind when they were promoting that, I was like, oh, they're making a movie. Like they're making an actual movie. And then when I saw it,
I thought it was just a movie.
It was literally just
a recording of the play.
I was like,
and then they won in film categories. I was like, that's not a film.
No.
That's a recording of a play. And anyways,
Jade, the most egregious thing that I think I'm the most angry about is the animation category.
Oh,
so
you and I both thought Spider-Verse had it in the bag.
And it should have. It is easily the best. Look, I know. So the winner of this was The Boy and the Heron, which has gotten an insane amount of hype and is supposed to be great. And you know what? I'm not going to sit here, Jade. And yeah, I'm not going to dispute that. I'm not going to sit here and say it's probably bad. It's probably great.
Yeah.
Is it terrible of me to say, and I know I'm saying this about a lot of movies, I feel like I know what I'm going to, I know what's going to happen in a movie like that. I've seen these types of movies before. And to me, Spider-Verse was something completely original. And that's saying something, especially because it's a sequel, which you don't. The originality. The originality in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, speaking from a person's point of view who I have been so critical of fucking superhero movies on this podcast. It's a breath of fresh air. I rewatched it again recently, Jade, on a plane when I was going back and forth from Ireland.
I just watched it recently too, because it's on Netflix.
It's even better than I remember it. Like it was even better than I fucking remembered it.
I still cried. Like it is such, again, to this day, for 2023, now that it's over, I think Spider-Verse is still the movie of the year to me. I just think 100%. It topped everything I watched in 2023. But again, Boy and the Heron, I believe is probably cinematically absolutely wonderful, probably has a great story. From the reviews that I've heard people talking about it, to me, it does seem like something that I've seen before. And I just felt like, Spider-Verse kind of broke the mold a little bit with animated film.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We'll see come Academy Award time if it gets its flowers then, but.
I think sometimes you could almost argue that because the Globes have always been seen as kind of a predecessor for the Oscars, like an indication of what's
hot. A little
hot,
bit, like a, and what's a winning. Predictor, yeah.
I don't feel like the award winners from this year are that way at all, with some exception. I don't feel that way at all. I'm really glad to see this win. Like we saw Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, I think that's a great win for her. It was a very odd category. I mean, we had like Carey Mulligan for Maestro. We had like Greta Lee for Past Lives. We had
Kaylee Spaney.
I don't know who that is. I literally don't know who that is.
She's a somewhat unknown actress, but for Priscilla, she played Priscilla.
You played Priscilla. And then I don't even know what Naiad is. I don't even know what that fucking movie is.
It's a Netflix film and it stars Jodie Foster and Annette Bening. And it's based on a true story about a woman who like swam across, I think, the English Channel. Regardless, it's like there's nothing else for Naiad or Priscilla or any of these other things on here. So the fact that these were the actresses chosen, and I'm sure they gave amazing performances, but it just still felt like weird choices for best actress in a drama.
It really did. Like, and it didn't seem like, I'm not going to say there was no competition.
Except for Greta Lee.
But yeah, but interesting. Also, I feel like they set up, I think Cillian Murphy is great for the win here in Oppenheimer for best actor drama.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like he didn't have that much competition, let's be honest. Like you had Barry Keoghan, who's in Saltburn, who, don't get me wrong, gives a great performance. I think he's amazing in Saltburn. Bradley Cooper, I don't get Maestro. I don't get it. I knew he wasn't winning. I don't understand that. I didn't see Rustin, so I don't fucking know what that is. Another movie I haven't heard of with Colman Domingo. And then you have Andrew Scott for All of Us Strangers.
I do want to see All of Us Strangers.
I do, yeah.
And Andrew Scott is amazing in everything.
Great in everything. But like, I think we all knew Cillian Murphy was going to win. Also, can we just say
of
here,
course.
Three Irishmen in one category?
I know. Kind of big, honestly. Like, I think Ireland in terms of entertainment has been on the come up for Irish actors and for, I've been seeing a lot more Irish TV being, here in the US. Like, I just feel like it's their time to shine. They're like, listen, England, go fuck yourself.
Is this a new like English like actor wave? Like, I feel like we had that like yes. a couple of years ago. Now it's all Irish actors.
Yes, 100%. I think it's this like new wave, and I'm here for it, and I love it. Yeah, more Irish actors.
How about also Paul Giamatti snagging a Globe for The Holdovers, which is another movie I don't feel like anyone saw.
So bizarre. Again, obviously neither of us have seen Holdovers, but I barely even seen anything about this movie.
No, I didn't even know it was a movie until he won. And they were like, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. I'm like, what the fuck is The Holdovers? What is that?
I love Paul Giamatti. I think he's a great actor. But also I'm like, it's kind of wild because of who he's up against. Like, my predictions from when we talked about this last was either Nicolas Cage for Dream Scenario or Joaquin Phoenix for Beau Is Afraid.
I haven't seen those yet, but like, I know those are good performances. Yeah. Like, I've heard from multiple people that they had great performances in those.
Of course. So, I mean, not to say I'm sure Paul Giamatti was also equally as good, but I just felt like it was still felt very random to me. I don't know.
Also, why the fuck is Matt Damon in this for Air? Why the fuck?
Again,
He barely did anything in that movie.
He was barely a character.
No,
I don't know.
How does he have enough screen time to be nominated for best male actor? Another thing I do love in the movie category is that Emma Stone won an Globe for Poor Things.
Like, yes, absolutely.
I'm excited for her.
My prediction as well.
Yeah. I mean,
snag a second Oscar.
Oh, I think she could. And for this one, I would be happy because La La Land is trash. La La Land is absolutely trash.
Thank you. Same. This would be the movie first of all, she should have won the Oscar
for Cruella. Absolutely.
Instead of La La Land, because that's a much more phenomenal performance for her. But also, like, yeah, 100%. I think Poor Things is like her magnum opus thus far as acting.
Oh, 1,000%. Let's see one more here before. Oh, and one more. I'm just going to say that I'm pissed off. And if you have one more, we can throw this in. But like, we already kind of said it. Best director went to Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, up against Celine Song for Past Lives, up against Bradley Cooper for Maestro, trash, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. The director, was it Yorgos Lanthimos? For Poor Things. And then Greta Gerwig for Barbie. Listen, say what you will about Barbie, I think this was Greta Gerwig's year. Like, you can even take out some things about the movie. I mean, she helped win a Golden Globe for Best Cinematic Achievement. She is like literally one of the only female directors that has directed a billion-dollar movie. She is on the rise. Like, she went from doing obscure fucking Noah Baumbach shit. I would be shocked at the amount. I could probably count on one hand the amount of people that I know have seen Frances Ha. Like, I bring that up because I'm like, I've been watching Greta Gerwig since
Frances Ha.
I've been watching it since she was in that kind of shit. Like, I know who Greta Gerwig is. And to see her do this, she absolutely deserves a fucking directing recognition for her work in Barbie. And to see that she didn't
100%.
Win, unreal. Unreal.
Like I said, we'll see what happens to the Academy Awards. I'm hoping that they're a little bit more like discerning and they can recognize more. Like I said, I believe the Globes is a little bit of a paying game.
Yeah. Because you can't pay off, what is it, like some odd thousand members, even if it's within your own
category, the Academy.
Several hundred members of the Academy. You can't take that many people
versus
out
members of the foreign press. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up here before we move on here, Jane?
Just a quick hold over to TV. I just want to say, so excited that Beef won for limited series, which is absolutely incredible. We'd love to see Asian actors winning, especially in an all Asian cast. For me, it was between like Beef and Lessons in Chemistry. So I'm glad that Beef got its flowers because I was worried that they weren't even going to consider it next to something like Lessons in Chemistry or Daisy Jones, which are primary all white casts. And then of course, as well as, best TV comedy being
The Bear.
I mean, come on. We knew it was going to sweep. The only other two that I think we said was the only real competitor I felt like was Ted Lasso. And then I wanted Jury Duty, but I knew it wasn't going to win. But I mean, just the fact that it was nominated is incredible. And I think James Marsden I think he was nominated for an Emmy recently Jury Duty. Yeah. So that's super exciting. That would be crazy if he won for something like that.
Also, speaking of The Bear, we also had Ayoade Adebiri winning for Best Female Lead, which
is
great to see.
Yeah. No, this is, this was for TV. I think they did such a great job. I think
I'm browsing the list now. I mean, Jeremy Allen White winning for The Bear, Ellie Wong winning for Beef. I mean, Stephen Yuan winning for Beef. Like, all great. Like, I think they nailed the TV. It's where I think they fell short was
movies. Film. Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Movie review. First look.
Let's talk about a movie this week, which is Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. Jade, initial thoughts.
Yes. So, you know, we talked about before, like, it's really hard with sequels to number one, live up to the original film, and number two, especially when there's been decades between the first and the second film. So, you know, I was hesitant going in because I have such a love for Chicken Run, but actually I thought they did a really good job of still keeping that kind of whimsy and magic and silliness from the original film while still feeling fresh for 2023, 2024. You know, I think the hardest part for me was the update of the decades, because I forgot the first one takes place in the 50s and this one takes place in the 60s.
I didn't get that at all. That's wild to me.
Did you not realize from Mrs. Tweedy's like whole outfit? Like, that's very 60s.
I think I just thought, you know how like some animation or movies just kind of do a timeless
stylized
thing? I thought it was just stylized. I thought it was just like I didn't expect that it was in the 2020s at all. And I was like, oh, they're just using like, they're using corded phones because that's just the aesthetic they're going for. Like, okay. Like that's, I did not read into it that much, Jade, at all. Like,
yeah, no, I looked it up and it's yeah, so the first one's supposed to take place in the late 50s and then this one's the early 60s.
Interesting.
So, yeah,
I will say, I don't know, I had a few issues with the movie. Like, there I definitely was entertained. Like, I think one, I'm just fascinated by animation, especially claymation.
Oh,
it's
my God.
Wild to me what it takes to just do stop motion like that, and to the dedication that art form. The art is amazing to me. Like, that part I loved.
Absolutely.
There were parts in this story though. Like, I remember the original Chicken Run. It's been a while since I've seen it, but like, I was entertained the whole way through. There were parts of this movie that just made me stop and go, "What? Like, what the fuck is happening right now? Why are we doing this?
Yes.
We don't need to be doing this right now."
I definitely have some stuff for trash that I felt like, you know, we've talked about this where I am editing the film a little bit as I was watching. There
took the words out of my mouth.
Like,
yep.
I literally kept being like, I would remove that scene, or like, I would actually focus more on this and then take less of like that or something, you know, like, and I kind of found myself doing that a few times. And that to me is an indicator that like, they couldn't quite settle on the exact storyline they wanted. And I felt like they were just a little bit like, oh, not all over the place, but a little bit off the line. You know?
I think for me, what it did was it, some of that took the beat out of their comedy. And I don't remember that from the first one. The first one, they had a rhythm and they kept it going.
Yes.
In this one, I feel like they sometimes sacrificed comedy for story. And I was like, look,
agreed.
This is a fucking movie about claymation chickens. I don't give a fuck about your
potholes. You're here for the comedy. You're here for the jokes.
Yeah, I don't care about this making sense or connecting. Just entertain me the whole time. Like, make me laugh. And I don't know where they missed it, but they missed it a little bit. But it's not all bad. I did love parts of it. We're going to get into that. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and give our full review of Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget.
Our feature presentation.
Cock-a-doodle-doo!
Life doesn't get better than this. We've put the past behind us. We have Molly to think about now.
Oh, she said to what a bonny wee hen.
I made her a bicycle.
Oh, what a lovely thought.
She is a lot like you.
See you later.
Hmm? Mum, can we go over there?
You've got everything you want right here.
Our movie this week is Chicken Run. Dawn of the Nugget. I almost forgot what the movie was, but it's on Netflix right now. It's, of course, the sequel to the original film, which was just Chicken Run. And that came out, I want to say, Jade, because I just lost my notes and my whole screen went black. That came out in like the early 2000s, right? Wasn't it been like almost 20 years since the movie came out?
Yes, because I got it on VHS.
Oh my God.
So
I feel like anything on VHS was purchased between the years 1995 and like 2003, right? Like somewhere in that span of
100%.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh, it came out. Give me your best guess, Jade. What year did Chicken Run come out? I just got the information back.
What, like 2001?
2000. Very close.
There we go.
It's hard to believe that. I know that it came out when I was a kid, but it doesn't seem like 2000 that movie came out.
Because for me, I have a very specific memory because I actually ended up with two VHS copies of Chicken Run because everyone in my family knew how much I love that movie. I was obsessed. So at Christmas, my mom got me one and then my grandpa got me one. And I opened them both and I was like, Chicken Run again. And I was like, fuck yeah. My mom's like, well, what are we doing with two of these? And I was like, I don't know. But now I have two.
Now I have two.
Like, yeah. But in case the tape on one gets fucked up, now I have a backup. 100%. And now I have neither.
Wait, you don't have either one of them?
No, my mom got rid of all of our VHS tapes. I know. Welcome to my horror.
Gasp.
It was just happening one day.
You know what a VHS copy of Chicken Run's probably, it's probably worth something at this point, especially an unopened, if you had an unopened copy.
Which I did, because I never opened that other one.
Yeah.
I know. Trust me. That's why I also have two Harry Potter, like Order of the Phoenixes, like first edition, because again, my mom bought me one and my grandpa bought me one.
Wait, the book or the movie?
The book. So the book is
definitely
I have
worth
one
money.
In perfect condition because I've never cracked it open. And then the other one was well loved. But yeah.
I don't know why. I also have none of the other Harry Potter books. I only have Order of the Phoenix. I don't know why.
Oh, I have all of them. I just have two copies of Order of the Phoenix. But I do have, Josh, very, very first US edition Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. That's worth, I think, like in mint condition, it could be $5,000. In good condition, $2,500. Because this is like, if you look at the spines, they all have the numbers on them of like the years, like year one, year two, year three, year four. Mine doesn't have that. That's because that was the first print run before they even knew if it was going to be a series.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so first U.S. copy. The Philosopher's Stone goes for way more because obviously it was first published in the U.K., but yeah.
Well, Jade, back to our movie. This movie also has almost a all-star cast, which I don't really remember. Oh, by the way, going back, you know what threw me for a loop, Jade? I didn't realize Mel Gibson was the original voice of Rocky in Chicken Run.
Yeah,
I
know, right?
I thought they were all just unnamed actors for the most part.
Well, the British actors kind of, because I think at that time, like, I don't think the US was like invested in much, you know, as for like UK actors. But Mel Gibson was supposed to be the American, which funny because he's Australian. So I feel like they got him.
He seems American, though. Like, honestly, like he seems American.
Well, his behavior now. Yeah, for
very
sure.
American. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we have in this one, we have, I'm going to get this name wrong. Is it Thwandu Newton?
No, it's T-H like Thomas. Tandwe Newton. Or like Tandy. Some people call it Tandy, but Tandwe Newton.
But she's from, I mean, Crash is where I originally saw her, which is a great movie, but also
she's in everything.
Westworld. And well, she's like in Mission Impossible and like.
Yes, I think she's like in Born Identity or something. Oh, yeah,
she's been in a bunch of action movies. Mm-hmm. We also have Zachary Levi in this film, who's from, I think most notably from Shazam, right?
And Chuck.
Oh, yeah, Chuck. Yeah, I never really watched Chuck. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know. Wow. I know. We have Bella Ramsey, which doesn't need an introduction. And then Imelda Staunton, who just recently was in The Crown. And we all know her from Harry Potter as the most iconic villain of that series.
10 times scarier than Voldemort. Sorry. She was the real villain. Yeah, but also David Bradley.
I was just going to say that. We have another Harry Potter alumnus. We have David Bradley in this as well. So really,
with Filch.
Yeah, Filch really kicked it up a notch in terms of star power. But Jade, let's just kick things right off. What do you think was treasure about this film?
So for me, treasure, I loved, again, I think they still kept that campy humor from the first film in this. Now, granted, yes, I wish there were more of it, but I think the notes in which they hit were exactly what I was looking for from this. Like, especially like certain, like, okay, so Babs is my favorite character from the first film. And I, again, still love her role in this. Like, she's supposed to be kind of like really ditzy and like stupid and like doesn't quite understand things, but like her little one-liners are so good. Like, make me cackle. And also just like her dumb little, like, she knitted a bicycle for Molly because she wanted to ride a bike, and she's like, oh yeah, and like knits it, and she's like I can't ride a bicycle but I love that like Babs did that anyways. Queen. And then also I love Fowler, because this is very British of like self-deprecation. Like, they do that very, very well. And Fowler is supposed to be that character of, it's, this is your British war veteran grandpa who just talks about how great England is all the time, despite the very large faults that it has. And this is how also, you know, it took place in the 1950s in the original, because he talks about the war, which he's talking about World War II, 1940s, and what his role was in the war. And so I just think it's absolutely hilarious, because he's the most useless person of everyone there, and yet he talks himself up so big as being this like war veteran, and he's like always on duty, but he's like completely, and then like how he just tells these like long-winded stories. Actually, the best fucking one, well, one of the best gags in the movie is literally Fowler. He's supposed to be like the lookout. He's at the top of the roof of the building, and he gets distracted telling this whole war story to this like slug who like, or snail or whatever, who can't get away from him fast enough. And then I love, because as the whole plot, everything that's like happening in the movie, they'll do like a quick cut back, and he's like still there talking, and that snail is still like, I am moving as fast as I can, and I can't fucking get away from this guy. So good.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah, especially too, like, I love, I love, like, also in the very end when they finally escape and he, like, finally finishes his story and he's like, oh, look at that. And he literally takes credit. He's like, look at what I did. I'm so amazing. Great. Love it.
Oh, my God. You know, I think for me, Jade, I already said this, but, you know, to me, I'm always enamored by any type of animation, and especially stop motion. It's so well done. It's kind of ridiculous, because you would almost think that the entire thing is computer generated. You'd be like, oh, this is just someone built this in a computer. And you're like, no, actually someone painstakingly did each
everything
thing is planned. Yeah. Everything is done.
Well, I mean, like, facial expressions alone, they have to build a separate head for every expression, for every character, and swap them out. And I think like Ginger had like 100 different heads alone, you know? And then they also talked about, because they had all those extra chickens in this movie that they didn't really have in the last film, they did something over like 1,000 clay feathers or something that they had to make, something insane. And I'm like, that's crazy. I just cannot imagine. Yeah. Like, that is so much. And I think one of the charming things about Claymation too is like, I love when they get close up to the characters and you can see like a little bit of a fingerprint in the clay. And I love that. I don't know. It just feels so like real and charming and authentic, you know, which like,
yeah. No, I get it. No, I totally get it. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, which I've actually seen some 3D animators add in to movies that are supposed to appear like claymation, which I think is so funny that they add that, because they know that that's like a very specific detail to claymation, because there's always going to be these little imperfections when you're dealing with that type of medium and you're handling these things, even though they're fired and it's, and they're solid now, but like during the process of making them, you know, there might be a little bit of the fingerprint indentation, but at that point, when you're making like 100 heads,
How can you catch every frame? You can't catch every frame.
You can't
do it. And then you don't have the money to go back and reshoot it. Like,
exactly.
Hundreds of hours. Whatever. Yeah.
It is what it is.
I think I also really enjoyed the character, the newly introduced character of Molly, especially in her relationship with Frizzle, because it's a story we've all heard before. It's a coming of age, like kind of trying to figure out who you are in the world and like what things are outside. Like, I just love the literal interactions that I think, like you said, it's the little interactions that make Chicken Run special as a movie. I love the thing where, you know, Frizzle is going after this cooler truck that is obviously full of nuggets or chickens that are going to become nuggets. And she's like, this is the best thing. You get, like, it reminded me of the claw from fucking Toy Story, where it's like, they have been chosen. Yes. Like, we want to be on this truck. And like, Molly's like, well, why do we want to do that? That sounds fucking great. Let's do that. And there's like this one interaction that like just cracks me up every time. And they're like, it's going to be cooler. Frizzle says, it's going to be cooler than a penguin's toenail. And she's like, Molly's like, what's a toenail? And then she thinks about it and she's like, what's a penguin?
When?
She's like, oh, you've got so much to learn. Like, come on.
I know. Her like underexposure to the world is so funny. Yeah. When she meets Frizzle. And also I love that interaction too, because Frizzle hasn't obviously been in that type of farm where Ginger and the rest of them have. Yes. Like, they remember being part of the chicken pot pie farm. So I don't know if maybe previously Frizzle was like a free range chicken. And so she never had that experience. But I love though when they're following the truck and she's like, what kind of chicken doesn't want their own bucket? And like, you as the audience are like, chicken in a bucket?
No. Well, Jade, maybe we should flip the coin now. And say, what was trash to you about this film?
Yeah, I think I kind of mentioned it before, but I think there's this point where they almost focus too much on the escape personally. Like, there was a point where I was watching it and I was like, how fucking long is it going to take to do this? Like, I feel like they've been trying to break them out of here for like over an hour of the film. That's what it felt like to me. I felt like it just like, as soon as they would accomplish one thing, it would be like, oh no, another wrench. And then they would defeat that. And they're like, oh no, another one. I'm like,
I'm trying to think. I feel like we watched something recently within the last year that had like 47 false endings. And
yes,
it felt like that.
It is.
It felt like that. Like, every time I was like, okay, we've gotten past the crux of the problem of going for this rescue, and we're going to get to the actual story now. Mm-hmm. Every time I thought that was going to be resolved, like you said, another thing happened. And you're like, wait, we just went through this whole major plan thing. And I think the problem too was like, once we got to the part of the story, which was the second act, when we were in that part of the movie of the rescue of them breaking into the facility to get Molly and Frizzle out, it wasn't funny anymore. Like the jokes suffered in that part. Like, there wasn't that many jokes. And I was like, wait, this is not Chicken Run. Like, there's not the banter. And then at a certain point, like, once they got to the villain and they were, we got some of that back again. And I was like, oh, I'm back in. Like, this is entertaining again. But like, that whole, I'd say a good 20 minutes in between there, I was just like, I'm not entertained right now. Like, that was my biggest problem with the whole movie.
More of a heist film than a comedy. And I was like, look, as fun as that is, like, I love those beats, those quick, witty, comedic little like one-offs. And like, that's what I come to Chicken Run to watch. And I think one mistake too was taking too long to introduce Mrs. Tweedy. You know, I understand they wanted to be this like 100%. I know they wanted to be this big reveal because in the first film, you think, oh, they got rid of Mrs. Tweedy. She's gone. This is a new thing. They kind of set up Dr. Fry to be like the main villain.
Which is not a good, he was not a good villain either. Like no, he was not interesting as a villain.
Terrible. I hated it. And Mrs. Tweedy is the ultimate villain. She's so funny. Her beef with like Ginger, in fact, this one fucking chicken just gets her goat. She's like, I can't rest till I kill this fucking bitch, this bitch chicken. You know what I mean? Like, it's hilarious to me. Like, and she's just a good villain. And it just took too long to introduce her. And by the time we saw her, I was already like kind of exhausted from already dealing with Fry and all this other bullshit. And I was like, can we speed this up?
Also, I forgot one thing, Jade. I forgot one major thing. And I think this is probably also on your list. They underutilized, I'm going to get the name wrong, Chicken Land? What is the name of the...
Yeah, it's like Fun Land, Chicken Land. I don't remember what they call it now, but it's...
It's where they make all the chicken zombies, essentially. And yes,
they built this almost like theme park for the chickens, and they are given these like little mind control collars so that the idea is supposed to be that they're really happy. And when they die happy, the meat tastes better, which actually... Yes.
It's actually true. That's actually scientifically true. Like, I remember going, one of the most more traumatic things in my childhood is I went to basically a slaughterhouse, but it was a farm.
Like an abattoir?
Okay. No. It was a farm. It was a farm that they farmed deer. Like they actually farmed deer at this place. So they had free range deer that were all over the place in their little, you know, couple hundred acres. But then they literally showed us how they slaughtered the deer. They basically led them into a box. So it was all dark. And then they shot the deer in the box. Yeah. That's how they did it because they
don't know that it's happening.
And they said you don't get that gamey meat from the venison because they're completely, essentially like unaware until the very last
minute. Well, because in case you guys don't know, fear obviously causes certain chemicals to course through your body. Yeah, cortisol, adrenaline, all those things. And that essentially almost poisons the meat in a way.
It makes it taste different. Yeah.
It just makes it taste different. It's not bad. I mean, we've all had a good steak before, but you know, it can change the quality or the flavor. And so that's what this whole thing is based off of, which is hilarious personally, because I'm like, they built a theme park for animals that they're going to slaughter. It's wild. Yeah. But it was also really fun and funny and interesting. And I wanted to spend a little bit more time kind of in this little theme park world. Like, I think Molly caught on too quick. And I think that's what bothered me too, is like, I wanted Molly to be a little bit more invested in this and her understanding to come much later, because I wanted there to be more of a learning curve for her of like, oh, there's a reason why my mom protected me from the outside world. And there's a reason why I wasn't allowed to do these things, because look at where I'm at. I also think they made a mistake but I just don't really understand the reasoning. So they introduce us to Frizzle, right? And she's the friend of Molly. She's the one who brings her to the farm. And then we never see Frizzle again, essentially. She immediately gets the little mind control collar.
Yeah.
And then she's just there being controlled. Molly gets the fuck out of there real early on. And then Frizzle's just stuck with the rest of the mind control people. And then it wasn't until towards the end of the film that they release her from the mind control. And even then, she still doesn't play a large part in the rest of like the rescue for the rest of the film. So I was like,
it's a waste of a character.
Yes. I was like, why did we bring her in? I wanted more. I would have loved if instead Molly and Frizzle got out together and then we got to have a rapport between the two of them. And, you know, she participated a little bit more because like she seemed very like savvy. Obviously, the fact that she didn't know that they were going to, you know, essentially slaughterhouse, whatever. But at the same time, like, just what was the purpose of her character other than to lead Molly to this farm? You know, I don't know. Just a little bit of a waste.
Did we have a best performance, Jay? Did you have a best performance in mind?
Yeah. I'm actually going to go ahead and say Bella Ramsey as Molly, you know, this plucky character. I think she did a really good job they did a really good job of portraying this character who, like, I think the idea is Molly is Ginger's foil. Molly is Ginger. And I think this is what every parent kind of faces when your kid is you and you realize, oh my God, I am fucking difficult. And like, that's kind of what Ginger realizes is like, cause Ginger's very like headstrong and she has this passion and she, you know, wants all these things and, but Ginger has seen and been through life. And so she wants nothing more than to protect Molly, but Molly is Ginger. So she rebels against, she pushes back. She's like, I want to do all of these things and I want to live this life, this adventurous life. And so I think Bella did a really good job of kind of bringing that character to life.
I agree. Like, I think I already gave it away. Like, some of my favorite interactions and lines came from Molly in this film. So I think Bill Ramsey, again, knocks it out of the park. And again, I haven't seen anything with Bella Ramsey in it that I've been like, I don't want to watch it. Like, I pretty much, if she's in it, I probably want to see it. Or if they are in it, I would definitely want to see it.
Same.
Yeah.
Agreed.
What about quotes, Shane? I know you probably have a whole list of quotes from this film.
I do, because it's Chicken Run. So, of course, just great quotes. I love this one where, obviously, this is when Molly and Frizzle meet, and Molly, you know, has grown up isolated on this island. So she's never been around humans before. She doesn't understand how like dangerous they are. And I love Frizzle's response. And she's like, you've never met a human before? They're kind of stupid. They feed us and they tidy up after us. They're basically like wait staff. Which is why I imagine our pets think of us, you know?
I really kind of actually, the one that I have not from Molly is, I love this one with Rocky and I think it's Ginger when they're talking about before they're about to break in and they're like, went to rescue Molly and Frizzle and they're like, we need a really clever idea. And they go, I'm going to go bust Molly out. And she goes, Ginger's like, how the bloomin' heck are you going to do that? And he just goes, by going in there and busting her out.
No.
I was like,
dude,
that was the plan. That was it made me laugh and so much.
The amazing part is the way he does end up getting in is so fucking hilarious to me. And it's like, also just, it like works, but then doesn't work. And I was like, that makes so much sense for his character. And also for his character being American, like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, checks out.
1,000%.
I do love this one when, this is kind of an ongoing joke they actually use throughout the movie between Nick and Fetcher, who are the two rats, and kind of Fetcher is kind of a little bit dumber one and Nick's a little bit more the clever one. Mm-hmm. So Nick's like, he's like, no way, that place is impenetrable. They're like talking about breaking in. And then Fetcher's like, yeah, and you can't get in either. Like, and he does that several times where like Nick will say something like one way and then Fetcher will just like repeat it, but in a dumbed down way, like not realizing that's exactly what Nick just said. So fucking funny.
Wait, there's another one where they go, because it was kind of funny because it was like a wink at like Tom Cruise where he goes, Nick goes, it's an impossible mission. And Fletcher's like, shouldn't that be the other way around?
Way around?
I was like, well done. Well played.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my God. What else you got?
Oh my gosh. I love this one. So again, I told you Babs is like my favorite character because she's like kind of an idiot and I love her. So Ginger's talking about, you know, they're getting ready to break into the facility. And so Ginger's like, all right, it's go time. And then Babs is like, oh, it's all right. I went before we left. Like, cause she thinks it's go time as in like go pee time. So good.
Oh my God.
Also, the relationship between Tweety and Fry, so fucking funny. Tweety was cracking me up. I love this line. She's like, I see you've met my current husband, Dr. Fry. Was I attracted to his large inheritance and vast acres of land? No, it was his mind.
Also, another interaction between Frizzle and Molly, where she's like, Frizzle like saves Molly from being like run over by like one of the other chickens or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she goes, what are you doing? Have you got a death wish? And she's like, no, wait, what's a death wish?
Yes. So good. So good. Yeah.
Which is why we needed more Frizzle like throughout the movie. Like,
exactly.
We
need more of the relationship between Frizzle and Molly, which is why I feel like Frizzle should have escaped with Molly, but
1,000%.
Yeah. I do love this one from Mrs. Tweety when she's just getting frustrated because like her husband's an idiot. And she's like, husbands and chickens, the banes of my life.
Oh,
because obviously in the first film, her husband was an idiot.
Yes.
So good. Okay,
all right. We'll do one more and then we'll give our review, our rating.
Yes. Let me just figure out which one. My last one.
I knew you had like seven more.
Yes. Okay. I'll do this one. So this is talking about Fowler, the old rooster. So I talked about how, you know, he's just standing on the roof the entire time, completely useless. So this is after they are thrown into the corn silo and then they use sunlight to make it into popcorn so they could like push them out.
Oh,
and
God.
The silo like explodes. So then it's like raining popcorn and fucking Fowler's like, ye gods, it's raining popcorn. Good old British weather, unpredictable. You never know what's coming.
So fucking dumb.
And the best part about it is because it's a very specific type of character that like this old British man of like British weather. It's just unpredictable. Like you just know. You know that old man. Yeah.
1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah. Well, Jane, I think it's time. Where do you rate this film? Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. Does it hold up? And what's your rating?
So I was originally going to say Jim because I do really love this movie and I do love Chicken Run, but I think ultimately it's going to be a shelf because I don't see myself actually watching this.
This is the most shocking, I think, rating you've ever given.
I know.
I was expecting a full gem here, and I was going to have to defend my shelf rating.
Your shelf? Oh my God. Okay.
That's what I was going to do.
So
because
it's funny because I wrote gem on my in my notes, and then I scratched it out and wrote shelf because I think when we sat on it for those like 2 weeks, I realized I was like, I don't know if I'll ever return to this movie.
Because I fully intended to watch it again, to give it another watch and refresh, which I didn't. But right. I did watch a couple of clips just to kind of refresh my memory. And I was like, here's where I'm at. Because I think I'm at a point in my life with both books and movies, especially, where like, I think when I was younger, I would force myself. I'd be like, I need to watch this movie because it's popular. I need to watch this TV show. I need to read this book because it's what other people think is good. I need to think it's good. I need to think that it's... And I'm past that point in my life. And I'm like, you know why I don't want to watch this movie again? It's not because objectively it's good or bad. It's because I'm not entertained by it.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I agree with that because like for me... I'll rewatch the first one. And I did. After I watched this, I'm saying,
like, if you were to say right now, like, hey, do you want to hang out sometime and watch Chicken Run? I'd be like, absolutely. Like, I'll watch the movie right now. I'll watch the movie right now. If you were to say right now, like, I want to watch Saltburn, like, you could watch Princess Bride, like, any of these movies. I'd be like, absolutely. I'll watch the movie right fucking now. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you said Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget,
I'd be like, I don't know.
So, Pass. And that's the thing, like objectively, it is still a good film. I still had a good time watching it. It's just, it's not something that I think is going to hold as much.
We're not going to be quoting this in 20 years. Like,
no,
we're not going to look back and say, well, has it been 20 years? You know, we're going to look back in 20 years and say, remember they made a fucking sequel? I fucking forgot about that.
You know what I still say to this day? Has she gone on holiday? Which is from the first film. And my mom and I quote that to each other all the time.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, you could say that. I'd be like, Chicken Run. Like,
yes, because it's when they take the chickens to the slaughter and Babs just thinks they're on vacation. And I'm obsessed with that. So
this is also a shelf for me, Jade, like 100%. And I don't feel the need to defend that now. So I'm not. It's a shelf. It's, you know, if you watch, I would say to the people out there, if you watch the first one, go ahead and watch this. You'll be entertained. But like, I don't think you'll like it.
Especially if you have kids. I think the kids will love it for sure. So, yeah.
That was our review of Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. You can watch it now on Netflix.
There's something strange about this place.
Behold the dawn of the nugget.
Last time we broke out of a chicken farm. Well, this time, we're breaking in.
And once again, our movie this week was Chicken Run. Dawn of the Nugget is streaming now on Netflix if you want to watch it, which, you know, I mean, you can watch worse things on Netflix. Believe me, I have.
Weekly watches.
This is some weekly watches.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, I guess now it's a multi-week watch, but it's,
yes,
who's keeping fucking track? If you don't mind, Jade, I'm going to go first here. Sure. I watched a movie that I'm going to warn people against. Like, don't waste your fucking time. You're going to see this.
I have a feeling.
You're going to see this on Netflix. It's going to pop up. You're going to go, Ethan Hawke? You're going to go, Julia Roberts? Or maybe even go, Mahershala Ali. And go, this is going to be good. Like, mm-hmm. I like those guys. I like those actors, actresses, and different things. Probably a great movie. Jade, I was one of those people. I was like, how bad could it be? This was even with a warning from you. You were like, it's not that good. And I'm like, okay, but come on.
It's Julia Roberts. Wife a whole diatribe,
yes,
about how much I hated this film.
And this film is called Leave the World Behind. And it was like in the top 10 of Netflix, probably because of these actors that were in it.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, because I think of, like, Ethan Hawke now does not take projects that he's not passionate about. Same with Julia Roberts. She literally has talked about in interviews, she's at a point in her life where she gets to choose scripts. She only takes stuff that she can pretty much shoot in LA because her and her mm-hmm. husband like to be at home with their kids. So they don't go anywhere. Like, they try not to travel, or at least travel at the same time to shoot films.
Right.
So when I see her and Ethan Hawke take movies, I go, I'm paying attention because these are two actors and actresses that I respect.
Yeah.
Aside from the Obamas producing this, I don't know why the fuck these people are attached to this project. I don't understand. Let me take it back. I understand what the movie's about and what the point of the movie was. Ugh. The way they got to the point was so nonsensical and irritating and just, I'd rather.
But they couldn't even really pick an exact point. I feel like everything was still so, like, they were kind of telling you what it was, but then they were still being so weirdly vague about it because they didn't really want to settle on like a true enemy or true whatever, because it's the Obamas. So they're like, well, we're not going to say exactly who's been doing this. We're just going to kind of leave it up to you to determine.
And it was ambiguous. To mm-hmm. a point that was just annoying. It was just I didn't need to care anymore. I don't care
anymore. Not only that, but there were so many things left unexplained that just made no sense. Like, what the fuck was with the deer?
Oh.
Were they being mind controlled? I'm so confused.
Never explained. Fucking explained.
Makes no sense. I was like, okay. The little girl, I wanted to throat punch her. I didn't understand the choices made for her character. The ending, atrocious. Like, I laughed and I was like, I don't think I was supposed to laugh. I don't think that was supposed to be a funny moment, but it was funny to me because I was like, that's absurd. It was just so absurd. I don't know. Don't watch it. It's literally not.
Also too, just like the whole back and forth, like just little things like, oh, we're renting out this house. Oh, we're the owners. We came home. And then like
that conversation happened like seven times.
It happened seven times. But also what was so weird was like the daughter and the like Mahershala Ali's being the dad and his daughter acted like they had some state secret from the other family. And I was like, are they going to I just thought they were going to murder them. I was like, are they?
Well, the I thought it was more like he had insider information. He knew what was going on. Yeah. And I thought that he was hiding from the family because essentially he didn't want to cause them to panic and freak out and potentially tried to kill them.
But the daughter also acted like she knew things and she didn't.
Yes.
None of them knew anything.
It was so weird. The only thing that they knew was that they got in an email saying that something was happening. And that's why he went back to the house. Basically, he got something that said, don't come to the city. And that's all they fucking knew. He didn't exactly know what was going on.
No.
He only just put the pieces together later about a client that he had and was like, oh, I think this has to do with this. But even then, also, they couldn't make a fucking decision on anything to save their life. Like, I was like, is Julia Roberts' character racist or is she not? Like, make a decision.
Oh, 100%.
If you want to make her racist and then explore that about racial tensions in this type of situation. And instead, it was like, it came to nothing. And then her and Mahershala Ali almost kiss. And I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
It was wild. Like, it didn't make... And then that whole thing with even Ethan Hawke's character, like, going out randomly going around with that random noise that didn't really make any sense. And then finding that
those
migrant
fucking flyers.
Oh,
that was weird. That was
and then
weird.
They go through the whole thing on it and then they don't explain it. And I'm like, I don't like, there
like
was
I said, so many things, so many doors opened and none of them closed.
No. And like, I don't mind a little ambiguity, but like literally the movie doesn't make sense. Like the movie doesn't make sense at all. It's
horrible.
It's horrible. It's the worst. Like trash. Absolute dumpster fire of a movie. Did you watch anything more positive, Jade?
Yes, 100%. I will say, I binged this Irish television series that is on Hulu. And I believe for you, Josh, it might be on Sky. Okay. But it's called Such Brave Girls. And it is actually created and written by the star character. I forget what her name is. But it's kind of about these like this family. It's the mom and two daughters, and they're kind of this very dysfunctional family. The mom really like treats the oldest daughter horribly, and her younger sister kind of gangs up on her. But at the same time, her and her sister are also still close. It's Kat Sadler. She's the actress who's also the writer and the creator. Okay. And it's just like this really kind of like funny, dry, a little bit dark commentary television show. I think they're like 30 minute episodes, but it's just fun and interesting. I really liked it. And I think it'd be a good watch if anyone likes that kind of humor.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Aside from Saltburn, I really don't have anything else, but let me just say, Saltburn's good.
Yeah. I'll speed run some, and then I'll end with one. I'll discuss a little bit more.
Ooh,
so,
okay.
Reacher season 2, trash, not great. I love season 1. Once I got rid of the detective stuff, School Spirits, which is a Paramount Plus original that is now streaming on Netflix. I saw this on my TikTok a lot. This is it's a definitely low budget production, so don't expect too much, but it stars Peyton List, and she's a high school student who was murdered at her school, and she becomes a ghost, finds out there's all these other ghost kids that have died at the high school, and she doesn't remember how she died or who killed her. So she basically sets out to figure it out herself, along with her ghost friends and her one living friend who can see her. It was fun and interesting. It was a good kind of little detective murder mystery that had this really interesting spin to it. Don't expect, like I said, too much. Understand these are all very unknown actors. They've done a couple projects here and there, but overall, I think they actually did a really good job. So if you're into kind of more like YA stuff, I think you would like it. I finally started watching Fargo. So I started on season 5. Some people might
be always forget about that fucking show because that came out years ago, and I never remembered when it was fucking on.
I think for me, I never got into it because when season 1 first came out, you know, it was on FX, episodes dropped weekly, and it's kind of slow, to be honest. And when you're watching a slow show week to week, I mean, it's easy to drop off.
100%.
So I fell off that train a long time ago. And honestly, I don't know why I didn't realize that it was an anthology for the longest time. I thought it was like just a continuation. And I was like, how are you making all these seasons off of this show? So when I found it was an anthology and season 5 had Juno Temple and John Hamm, I was like, fuck it. I'll just watch season 5, which has been a wild, wild ride.
You made me want to get back into the show.
I love it. I think starting with season 5 got me back on the train. It has a much better tempo than I think obviously season 1. So I'm going back now and starting rewatching the whole show, but definitely a recommend. It's on FX Network, but also premieres on Hulu. And then I also watched the Netflix animated miniseries called Carol at the End of the World. It's about an apocalypse that happens in 7 months. And the main character is kind of this woman who's struggling to deal with the reality of it. And so she wants some normalcy in her life and kind of sets about exploring how to do that. It's very like this introspective, like funny, but also can be really meaningful show. It's only a couple episodes. Like I said, it's a mini series. So definitely worth the watch if you're interested in that, especially adult animation. And then I'll end with my in-depth. I binged Echo, the Disney Plus and Hulu original series, the Marvel television show Echo, which is an offshoot of Hawkeye. So for those who don't know, Echo is a Marvel superhero character who is an amputee and deaf and indigenous. She's an incredible martial artist, and she also has these other kind of powers. I don't want to go spoil too much about it, but this series follows her after the incidents that happened in New York and Hawkeye, and she goes back to the reservation with her family and kind of ties up some loose ends. She learns a little bit about herself, her history, and her family. Meanwhile, Fisk, who's Kingpin, is after her. So that's why she runs back to her family. Let me just tell you, everything that had to do with her indigenous community, the history of her people, so fucking cool. I was so interested. I loved it. I loved that everyone in the indigenous community also used sign language with her. So number one, if you are deaf or hard of hearing who uses sign language, you actually get to watch a show where they're utilizing it, which I heard from a lot of people in the deaf community. It's way easier than trying to read the subtitles, which makes total sense because that's typically a lot of times that's their first language. And then also it showcases that this is a community that learned this because of one person who was part of their community. I mean, you know, because Echo was deaf, they learned it to communicate with her, which is really, really incredible, especially extended family and other members in your community, because they don't have to, you know, but they chose to. So I loved that aspect. Everything that had to do with fucking Kingpin sucked. I hated it. I was so bored. They also brought in Daredevil for a cameo, and that whole scene just was unnecessary. I love Charlie Cox as Daredevil, but I don't think it was necessary for this show. They keep bringing him in for these cameos. Like, remember in She-Hulk?
Yeah.
And I'm like, which I actually really enjoyed. I like their rapport. I would love to see Daredevil get with She-Hulk. Like,
oh, 100%. What's up? Yeah. No, I thought it was great. Yeah.
But for this, it wasn't needed. There's only 6 episodes in the whole show. Like, what are we doing here? So I don't know. Take it for what you want. I think it's wonderful representation. I actually really love her character. I think they needed time to flesh it out more. The plot, I think they had too much they wanted to showcase in terms of like her history, about her people, that I don't think they had time to do while also trying to incorporate this Kingpin plot. So I think that's where it falls short for me.
I probably won't watch that, Jade, but like, I hope there's people out there as well. Cause
like I said,
again, I said superhero movies like, and shows, like it takes a lot for me. Like it would take you
exhausting.
And multiple people. It's just too much at this point. Like
it's way too much. I think this is wonderful representation. So I'm glad this was made. And if they can keep this going, but make it better, I think this would be a wonderful series. But for the premiere, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jane, I'm excited to announce our movie that we're watching next week.
Which,
because we're watching
Saltburn. Surprise, surprise.
I'm so excited. So, Jade, this film is about, I feel like, everything that is not being talked about in social media. So if you know what we're talking about, maybe you're on a happy side of TikTok or some other social media that doesn't have crazy, disgusting, twisted things in it, but like, that's not where I live. And all we hear about are some of these, and I'm not going to spoil it for you, Jade, but some of these sexual deviant scenes, air quotes, yes, in the movie that are getting this shock value. But what's crazy to me, Jade, is this movie is actually just a movie about a middle-class kid who gets invited into
kind of aristocracy,
what you would say is American royalty,
mm-hmm,
and gets invited into the lifestyle and kind of takes it upon himself, or I should say he takes control of the entire situation. And it's a twisted, odd commentary of a film that is the definition of a dark comedy, because there are things that are funny in this film that are equally horrifying at the same time. And you're watching it just going, wow. And what's crazy to me, Jade, and I'm so interested to hear your take on this, the shocking parts of this film are not the parts to me that are being talked about. like there are some parts in this movie that I just went, holy fuck. Like yeah. that's a wild thing that just happened. But like, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just the person that's like that. That to me is either more offensive or more shocking than anything else that's being talked about on social media. Mm, like it's, okay. it's interesting. Yeah. Like I think it's a smart movie. I think it's a funny movie. I think it's a well acted movie. I could see this, like this movie reminded me of the first time I watched Cruel Intentions. This movie kind of reminded me of elements of like Triangle of Sadness. Like
someone I don't want to get Talented Mr. Ripley.
a little bit, but you know what? I think people that think this is Talented Mr. Ripley missed the point of the whole movie.
Okay.
100%. And all right. Look, I don't want to give too much analysis on this.
I know. Right now, I'm like,
I'm so excited to watch this again because I watched it, like I said, with family, and I want to watch it again kind of alone and really have more of my own thoughts as I watch it in a rewatch. And like, this is a movie, Jade. If this had been old school, like I was watching this one by myself or had been watching it like on a rented DVD, this is a movie I would have restarted and watched again immediately after it ended. Like, that's how I felt about this movie. I was like, oh my God, that was amazing. I want to go back and watch it again to see.
You know what's interesting too is this is also a female director. We have Emerald Fennell.
Yes.
And I think she wrote it too, right?
I'm not looking at my notes, but I believe she did write and direct this movie.
Which is crazy because like, obviously we saw that some other actors got some noms from Saltburn, but I'm interested to see if it'll get anything for the Academy Awards. And just, I don't know, a little bit more recognition from another female writer director creating.
I can make an argument for almost any of the actors, almost any one. Yeah, I agree with you. I can't believe that she had not been nominated for Saltburn. I think she should have absolutely been nominated. She deserves it. The directing in this is phenomenal. I think almost you could argue any actor in this. Barry Keoghan's great, but like all of the entire cast is outstanding. Like, I don't think there's one part in this movie where I was like, again, don't want to give it away, too much bias here, because maybe I'll watch it again and change my opinion. Maybe you watch it and change my opinion. I'm excited to watch this next week, Jade, but where can folks find us between now and next week?
Yeah, you guys can follow us on all of our socials. We're on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Our Taste is Trash. You can also find us on our website, ourtasteistrash.com.
Come back next week when we are going to review the movie Saltburn. It is streaming now on, holy shit, where is it? It's on Hulu.
Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. Damn it. Amazon Prime. Come back next week. To get ourselves a treat.